crime served.
Well, I'm sure that Washington figure is suspect, because what that means, what it simply means is...
Because they have to impose a maximum all the time.
Because almost every burglary, larceny, and checks and so on, all of those are 15 and 20 year maximums in Washington. And what he's looking at is the sentence imposed and not the maximum term fixed by the board upon review.
This is time served. These are statistics from national prison... Prisoners released from state and federal institutions. These are time served.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know, California...
17 years.
Yeah, but no, what I'm getting at is that both, I don't know, one Washington put in it's in the determinant sentence law. I doubt those figures even apply to it. I know California was very recent.
Why do you doubt these figures?
Because you want time. He said there were 1963. I'm not...
65.
Well, I don't think...
Well, it's a 65 article. The figures were from...
63.
1966.
Well, Tony, the only thing is, I think it's silly for us to sit here and argue, because we're going to have to argue it again before the full commission. But I think there's enough opinion in the commission. The fact is, there's three of us here that are at least pretty interested in it. And I'm trying to have a couple of the other members that there is at least some interest in the of an indeterminate sentence law. And all I'm suggesting is let's have an alternate proposal.
Is it relevant to consider the difference in cost that would result?
Sure.
I imagine that you'll have the administration cost will be a great deal more under the system that you're proposing, true indeterminate sentence.
They'd have to, or there's no point in going to the system.
Yeah.
Because if you're just going to have, actually, you've still got the same prison system and the same problems with rehabilitation. It's a warehousing problem now. These fellows aren't being rehabilitated. Sitting in prison. Now, these work release programs and things of this sort.
That's a little strong, George. There are, the OCI really is doing an awfully good job, and they are, in fact, achieving a darn good percentage of rehabilitation. They have really probably as good a vocational rehab program as anywhere in the country, and they're making some progress at the state pen, but much more slowly. I think it's easy to go overboard on criticism. I don't know, Tony. It seems to me that I'm somewhat inclined to agree with Lee that perhaps.
It's impolite of me to interrupt, and forgive me, but I think we should, if possible, go to the commission with a recommendation.
I agree.
And I'll entertain, and I'll vote for a motion to change this to the true indeterminate deal. I've been discussing this because I wanted all sides of it out.
I'll so move.
Yeah. Is there any further discussion?
Well, let me make sure I understand. Yeah. What is the motion now?
The motion is to change this so that it will provide that the trial court will impose the maximum sentence in each case, and then the time served will be determined ultimately by the parole and probation authorities. That, in effect, is it.
Let me just give you, here's the California, this is the way it's first section. Every person who's convicted of a public offense or imprisonment in any reformatory or state prison is now prescribed by law shall, unless such convicted person be placed on probation, a new trial granted, or the imposing of sentence suspended, be sentenced to be imprisoned in a state prison, but the court in imposing the sentence shall not fix the term or duration of period of imprisonment. Then it goes on. It's fixed by the board.
Court imposes an indeterminate sentence not to exceed the maximum authorized for the particular offense.
Isn't that what you got there?
Except that, Tony, you got to bear in mind that we mentioned a little earlier, this scheme contemplates that you do not do that, so that if you go to the board fixed term, then you may very well, you may want to provide for a different type of classification and different lengths and so on.
Well, that's what I mentioned earlier. It seemed to me that we should have different terms in the classifications, but the more I think about it, if this is what the court imposes, what difference does it make? The court's going to make that determination. We have to establish categories or classes here.
Well, if he's convicted of the way I would understand this, the work, see if you concur with me, John. If, for example, you're convicted of a Class B felony, then the court would simply decide, one, is he going to put him on probation or suspend sentence?
Yeah.
And then he decides not to, and then he is merely sentenced to an indeterminate sentence not to exceed 10
that's
years.
Right. Yeah, that's what I have.
And then the board would fix the actual term.
By having classifications.
Why would the board, actually then take another step and say, your sentence is 7 years, or would they simply accept this fellow in the OCI or the penitentiary?
I'd take the probation power away from the judge, but I don't think I'd
support Johnson.
So I'm not even going to make that motion. But I would, I think the way he'd basically be there and the term would not be fixed. That would be...
Well, except that, no, but even under the California and the Washington systems, let me say this, if I said 10 years and it said it's up to the board and then the guy just goes there and you don't ever tell him that, can you imagine anything more destructive?
No, you would
than
say
that?
Not exceeding 10 years.
The board, after they study the guy, usually after 90 days or 6 months, they bring him in, they have a hearing.
120 in California.
Well, anyway, they bring him in, they have a hearing, and they set the minimum and the maximum.
Right. And they say, you're going to come out before us in a year.
I don't know. So.
Well, eventually in Oregon, and most states, he will be in the direction that we're moving.
But anyway, now, you also have to bear in mind that where you have a true diagnostic center, as they do to some extent in Washington, and they do rather fully in California, at least for some times, they will put him through that diagnostic center before the case comes before the board or authority, whatever you call it.
Jim, what are we going to do with the Ways and Means Committee? They examine this, and it's logical that a diagnostic center is required, some facilities of that nature. We adopt all of this, and the Ways and Means Committee says, well, I'll be darned if we're going to provide another $1,700,000 to implement this thing, and here we've got it passed, then where will we be?
Well, I would think, certainly, if you seriously consider Lee's proposal, one thing you'd want to do is to have a meeting with Jack Wiseman and say to him, how would you or your counterpart go about implementing this kind of a thing?
No, thanks.
Well, as a very practical matter, when you look at the evolution of the appropriations over the last three or four sessions in the area of corrections, I don't think that's going to be will be a significant problem. It'll have to be mapped out. But the amount of money that this last Ways and Means Committee committed to corrections and crank into that department and really committed it as a first stage of a kind of a long-term commitment indicates that we're committed toward this kind of approach.
Like
I mean, Bob Davis, Day and
we're both
all
gone.
Yeah, right. but nevertheless,
it's going to be a significant portion of the governor's program.
Let me ask Judge Burns a question and then maybe make a comment. Judge, do you know can you identify what kind of people there are now on this California board? What kind of backgrounds they have? Are they professional, correctional people?
that you'd expect, or are they the lay kind of people that we...
They're a combination, California.
I can't answer that. I simply don't know. I'm
not opposed. I'm just thinking out loud. Yeah. I think that's the idea.
That's
I'm
right.
Not opposed to this motion at all, but I do present one thought that is, we have an analogy to already. We decided, when we looked at responsibility, that we didn't want psychiatrists making the decision whether a person who had been found not guilty of a reason of insanity now by irresponsibility to be out on the street on the certification of the psychiatrist. Because we feel, and I think justifiably so, that the psychiatric profession has not yet arrived at that hard point in their career where they're really accurate in making those decisions. We felt that we would rather rely on the experience of the judge in ultimately now letting him back on the street. All right, now are we getting into the same situation with the straight prisoner who's only got his usual hang-ups, but we can't identify him as irresponsible, who goes to this board, which is now a psychiatrist, psychiatric social worker, sociologist, correctional specialist, maybe a lawyer. The whole focus, in other words, is on the professional, on the soft sciences. That's kind of a mean way to refer to them, but they are. They're soft sciences. They don't know anything yet. There's no empirical data about dangerousness. There are no statistical tables even to tell us about personality types. The sociologists admit themselves readily that this doesn't exist. Are we putting ourselves in the hands of a system which is going to produce a system of, well, perhaps monsters?
The basic decision you've got to make is whether you're going to go to this kind of concept. Now, all you're doing is you're saying instead of having 90 guys make the decision, you're going to have a board of 3 or 5, and you can decide whether you want to make that board a group of experts, or if you want them, you can make them 5 judges. Wouldn't make any and they in turn rely on the psychiatrist for expert testimony.
Well, let me ask, I think George is the judge.
He's a hard scientist. He's a lawyer. Synthesis, at least. He's a man who can recognize the weaknesses not only in his own profession but in the other professions, which sometimes are not recognized as such. I mean, the judge is, in fact, the
whole paragon of virtue.
And I never tried to case in court.
Crank in the full-time parole board concept so that the members would be cranked in at about the level of a circuit judge. Now,
we didn't spell out any statutory qualifications.
No, but we have to have confidence in our executive's appointing ability.
Well, what's wrong with having some confidence in our judges? You know, I think that we're assuming that these judges are a bunch of rumdums.
Oh, some of them have hang-ups.
You can look at the recommendations of the ABA, who gave extensive study to this, the Model Penal Code, and the Model Sentencing Act. And now, all three of these, which are really the big three studies that have been done on sentencing, if there's one thing they all agree on, it's in favor of retaining some judicial control over the sentences.
Yeah, but who are they written by?
Sociologists to write about sociologists.
They're not written by judges.
Well, they're written by primarily people that are judicially oriented. They're written by lawyers, aren't they?
I don't know. I want the record to show that I am now on the average on both sides of this question.
Well, this is kind of like that Judiciary Committee bill that Tony referred to, a subcommittee of one proposed to the famous senator and came back high vote.
Listen, I want to compliment all of you this morning. I haven't heard anybody say that they're written by law professors, which is the worst you can say.
Well, I think a law professor has nothing to do with this.
But the point that you haven't made, Don, is the fact that every one of your writers observes that one of the most recidivistic traits there is But one of the things that contributes most to recidivism is the disparity in sentencing.
Now, who said that?
Who said that?
We're correcting a good amount of that through the very structure of our of our code that we've been writing for the last 2.5 years.
And I should point this out, too, as I mentioned, I think I mentioned this to Lee last night. I don't claim to be any great expert, but I do claim to have some experiences that I don't think you folks have had, and that is I have been inside of 3 prisons under circumstances which gives a fair look into some of the thinking there. And the fact is that inside of the prisons, the beef mainly is not so much disparity of sentencing as it is disparity of parole. Now, you have to bear in mind, in evaluating that remark, you have to bear in mind that those guys that are locked up are unhappy all the time. They're going to holler about something all the time, and usually they're hollering about what can I do to get myself out. But you're mistaken to think that you solve the disparity problem by transferring them from a judge to a board. I'm satisfied of that. You're still going to have significant disparity
I think there is a substantial chance we'd lessen it. But the point is, this is where I get at, Tony. I really, even for us to make a recommendation, I don't see what good it's going to do, because it is a major policy question on which we all have fairly firm opinions about. And I just, it seems to me it's a lot easier to go, because all we're going to do is sit here and argue ourselves, and then we're going to have to clear through the whole argument again.
Well, would you prefer drafting an alternate along the California line and submitting them both to the commission?
That's my thought. I think it's just because we're just sitting here, we're really just chasing windmills.
Well, I know, but if that isn't the purpose of us chasing windmills, we might as well go home.
My point is,
we should make a recommendation, and then we can present an alternative as a minority report.
Not as a minority report. Simply as an alternative. Don, is that all right with you? I suppose.
Well, I think the unfair, the thing that would be unfair for us is to go before the commission with one proposal, and then if a majority of the members want another one, you're using the argument against them, well, gee, this is going to take us another 2 months to draft or something like that. That's what I'm trying to avoid.
Well, question then is, Don, what is the deadline? The printing deadlines, the technical deadlines with respect to the submission?
I don't think we're going to meet them anyway.
Well, if we want to have any time for discussion of this and to give legislative counsel adequate time to work on this, we should have it printed, and this is allowing 60 days for printing. We should have this printed by the 1st of July, in my opinion.
To the printer or printed?
We should have it printed and ready to go, not only for distribution, for discussion among the bar and the bench around the state and whatnot, but also to be able to present a proposal to legislative council, be put into bill form, and to give them ample time before they get bombarded in anticipation of the next session of the legislature with all these other duties that they have to.
We're talking 24 days then?
Well, not necessarily. It could be fed to a printer over a period of time and make this the last article. That could be able to give yourself a little flexibility that way.
Oh, I get it.
Tremendous amount of stuff.
Yeah.
The printer
can
be maximum working.
We're running out of time. There's no question about that. I mean, we don't have an unlimited amount of time to do these things. There's a great amount of further checking of statutes, repealers, amenders, and all this that has to be done. Although we've made, I think, a good attempt as we've gone along to keep track of all these statutes, and I will submit a list of them to the Legislative Council, nonetheless, it's their responsibility in the final analysis to do these things and to see that all of our references are internally consistent and whatnot. And it's going to be a tremendous job. And we've tried to approach it in in a better manner, I think, than they did in Michigan, for example. If you look at the last section in Michigan, it just says statutes to be repealed, parentheses, to be supplied by the legislative bureau. And that's the way they went about it. And you know, we've got to... But...
Well, coming back to this,
California, I can do this, Tony.
We can pick that up if you want to model on California.
I can lend you some help if you need some staff help.
Don, did you hear that?
Yes.
Can you use it? Why doesn't your office simply draft this thing and submit it to Don for examination within the next week?
All right. Well, give me 2 weeks.
That'd help you out, Don.
Well, in one section, you're in effect.
But I don't think we really affected many sections.
Well, let me ask
you, Lee, so either.
Would you, what about misdemeanors?
It's a draft, it's the explanation of what the court thing that goes with it.
If we can set it into four categories, like A, B, C, 5, 10, 15, 20, I'd be less reluctant to leave it to court. That somebody mentioned that if you squeeze the judicial bearing down, then the argument for putting it on the board dissipates, I think. Because you're not going to get, for instance, Klamath County giving the guy 20, Marion County give them 2. The difference is going to be somewhere between 1 and 5, because they're in 5. We set the limits, and if Marion County gives 3 and Klamath County gives 4, then I'm not worried about that.
Yeah.
Well, and also, if you...
Are the two of you in favor of indeterminate sentences?
Well, by Oregon's definition or by California's?
California.
By the California type system.
Yeah, I am.
I think so, as I understand.
Well, let me make a suggestion, Chairman. Why don't I can put some people to work on this, and we'll try and draft up, get a hold of, I think we got to get a hold of some of the corrections people, get some of their comments, and let us present a draft, and let's go on with this as we are.
All right, well, Lee, that's
and
all right.
Too, right now.
But we would want your people to work under Don's supervision.
Right.
And also, we would want you or for you to be responsible for the commentary, the explanation, and discussion that accompanies that draft.
What we're going to do is get a draft of Don. Does that sound reasonable?
Well, frankly, it isn't going to help a great deal just to have a draft, because I'm still going to have to then research it and explain it, and so that the commission, when it gets, is going to be able to have some foundation.
That's what I had intended that they do, Don, the research, the citations, the explanation, and the commentary, so that keep in communication with you so that you will know and be able to change, modify, or anything you want with reference to the commentary or the discussion. I was thinking that they could do their research for you.
But we have quite a bit of information and material in the office already from California, and we have some legislative interim reports.
Well, why don't I do this?
Simply
to give you my hand, I'll give you, if you need some assistance, I can make 1 or 2 men available to you.
Well, let's ask Don, what do you want?
I'd rather do it myself.
Oh, all right.
Please, Mother.
Okay. But as long as far as internal control over the thing, knowing when it's going to be done and who's doing it and where we've got to go for the information, I think that...
Why don't you do this, Don?
If you need any help, Colleen,
why don't you do this, though? Why don't you figure out what policy decisions within it have to be made. And so the three of us, and then I can give you a call, and we can maybe decide what to do on those. So we've got at least a basic draft to put together.
But...
Well, are we going to make a policy decision now on that? Or are we going to...
Did we take a vote? No, we haven't. Perhaps I could ask this way. Let's ask for the votes of those who are in favor of the California indeterminate sentence. Jim? You're not. I thought you were the one that led this argument.
No, I started out by saying I have very mixed feelings about it, but...
You're the way I am.
But on balance, and given this kind of a general proposal, and bearing in mind the side consequences of that kind of decision and so on balance, at this time in Oregon, I would be against adopting it.
I said before, and I don't think we should minimize the effect of what we've done up to date. And one of the reasons for the disparity of sentences has been the great proliferation of crimes. Different statutes for similar offenses carrying completely arbitrary and different maximum sentences. And that's why you get a guy who's stolen a cow gets one kind of a sentence, and the guy who's stolen a car gets another kind. And a lot of these problems we have hopefully taken care of as we've gone along, because we've eliminated at least a third and probably more of the different statutory crimes that exist in seven chapters of ORS right now.
Well,
we have at least a third.
I don't think you're going to get a problem.
Plus the fact that Oregon already does most of the things that all these sentencing experts are recommending that you do, and that is you don't have minimum sentences.
You're going to take a vote.
Wally, how do you...
He's kind of teetering.
Yeah, I really am. Because
South on us, Wally?
Right. Yeah. Well, one of the problems is, what Don is pointing out, is that a lot of the problems I see with our present system, I think we've already corrected. And I wonder seriously whether we're ready financially and with expertise to make this step here. And what I'd like to see is what we're talking about. I'd assume we stayed with this proposal, but with Lee's amendment. I think if we had Bob, for instance, somebody mentioned Bob Davis and LBA. If we had those two guys in Ways and Means, I'd be willing to stick my lead in the chin and vote for this kind of thing. But I frankly trying to convince Newbery and Hansel and these guys that, because if we do it without getting a diagnostic aspect, without beefing the board up, so within its 120 days, it can make the determination.
Well, Mr. Chairman, let me suggest that I'll withdraw the motion that I made. I still very strongly believe in the California system, and it looks to me like it's 2-2 and 1 abstaining. And I
have voted for
it. I'll withdraw the motion that I made to substitute the California system, and a move that Don draft an alternative section 3 based on the California system that Lee and I or whoever can present to the full commission at the time that the subcommittee's work goes to the full commission. And I think that it would be helpful in that regard, based on what Wally said and based on the earlier statement that I made with respect to the commitment that Ways and Means has made to corrections, to ask legislative fiscal and the corrections division to develop a cost impact analysis for us. It's going to have a cost impact. There isn't any doubt about it. We should be realistic. And I don't know, I think you could talk to Bill Barrows, and he could take it and probably talk to Galvin and Tim and come up with some sort of an analysis. So that's my motion, Mr. Chairman.
Now, that's going to take some time.
Yes, I just going to say, you're talking maybe 60 days.
Well, I don't think so.
What if you are talking 60 days? Then where are
we? Then the full commission is going to have to make its decision between Section 3 and all our alternative without the benefit of the financial analysis.
Because it took me 3 weeks to get an analysis as to the impact it would have if we had the state police handle all the concealable weapons permits in the state, which was, you know, by comparison to this, was nothing.
Where did you get that out of?
Bill Barrows.
I suggest, though, if we had Senator Burns and Sonny Turi, no offense, but it's amazing the difference in time frame.
I'll ask him, because I introduced an indeterminate sentencing bill in 67 session and have a cost analysis prepared with it. Maybe he would only update it. But in 1967, they did prepare a financial impact table. Bill languished in Senate Judiciary, but...
I remember that bill.
Yeah, you killed it.
Well, John, your responsibility is to obtain that cost analysis study.
Well, it's just like the arson thing, you're out to get
done.
All the way back here. Now we're getting to the real motive.
I felt the same way about gun control, is that here are two areas that I think the commission definitely ought to be concerned with. But I think are perfectly appropriate to treat as separate bills because they are more than just a revision of the law. They do have a definite fiscal impact.
Yeah. Well, all right then. That's what we'll do. You'll prepare an alternative, and we'll submit it to the full commission. Where does that leave us?
And you'll talk to legislative fiscal, John.
I'll talk to legislative fiscal. All right. Well, we haven't, Mr. Chairman. After the benefit of all this speechifying, you still haven't. Is there any point in talking about these particular figures, 20, 10, and 5?
Well, I think we ought to proceed as if we're approving this one.
Yeah.
Frankly, because if we don't have something like this, then.
Yeah, the suggestion I think would be, I suppose, purely political for purposes of bargaining, but it seems to me that the normal reaction of people who don't pay any attention is to increase sentences rather than decrease them. Why don't you start lower, at least, to meet people by going up rather than have to start from here and go up? Just a little horse trading.
Well, I won't go up from this, personally.
You won't go up? 20 is high enough for you?
Yeah.
For murder, too?
No. Murder is life. It's separate statute.
What about Russell?
No. I won't change on that. Yeah.
What about first degree kidnapping?
20 years.
Armed robbery?
20 years.
Assault with intent to kill?
20 years.
Next.
I can tell you the kind of problem you're facing from the other side of this is, on the Brutos thing, where we gave the governor an informal opinion on that and asked him not to ask it for us formally, because we can go to the governor's office and ask and see if we can repeal the death penalty right there. The fact that those sentences are concurrent, he's eligible for parole in 10 years. One of the parents is ready to go. And it's just that kind of emotional issue. If the death penalty is true.
But my God, if the average is 11 years.
The public is
well, that's what I was suggesting.
The public wants
that. They
figure
that's the solution to all crime.
Yeah. Nothing
can be further from the truth.
But what I had in mind, treating murder separately, and I know it. I mean, here in Oregon, really, it really hasn't been very many years ago that we repealed the death penalty. And I think one of the things that helped sell that was the assumption or the knowledge on the part of the public that they would be secure in knowing that a guy would get life imprisonment for first degree murder. And if we come back now and say that it's going to be treated along with every other Class A felony, I think you're really going to have some problems.
Well, I would never suggest that. I would suggest either or, Class A or life. That's all I'm suggesting is the court ought to make a determination based on the individual case rather than automatic 25 or 25.
Well, I think my only point is no matter what we do, all the confined dwelling, you'll never come into the public at their present stage.
If you do away with the statute on minimum time served before eligible for probation, parole, I don't think it's going to make any difference, George.
Besides that, George, under your homicide draft, there aren't going to be many murder convictions. They're all going to get convicted of manslaughter because they're going to have a compelling reason for committing these murders.
Under responsibility. I remember that
battle. Okay, Jim, do you want to go into this further?
Well,
is anybody else on this classification and the terms?
Well, as I understand it, this is generally along the lines of that suggested by the ABA and the other studies.
Generally, yeah, and these are the terms that Michigan picks. But I have cranked into it a dangerous offender category where you can tack on another 10 years, in effect give them 30 years under certain circumstances.
But you substituted that. How does the 20 compare with our present law? Where does it change the present law?
Well, it's going to change it with respect to
we have certain life,
certain individual
assault,
intent to kill, armed robbery, kidnapping, the first degree.
What do you do with first degree burglary?
Well, of course, we've already in effect enhanced the penalty in those already because of our grading scheme. We've made it first degree, which is going to carry automatically a higher sentence, and I didn't see a reason to further enhance the penalty and tack on another thing onto it unless the guy was a dangerous offender.
Well, now, but where would first degree burglary, which we've enhanced beyond what it otherwise was, by saying if you're armed with a dangerous weapon or you caused injury in the course of the burglary, then it's first degree.
Class A.
Would that be a Class A? Would that be a Class B or a Class?
Well, I would think, under the way we've defined it, it'd be a Class A because the possibility of danger to the persons of others.
Which is still shorter than all these, Jim.
Well, I move we approve the. Section 3, Mr. Chairman.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried. I'll slip that in without Judge Burns knowing the vote.
It's an hour and a half. Section 4.
I
move
we
approve it.
Everybody wait for the Attorney General to read Section 4.
Yes.
Nothing wrong with it.
For an unclassified misdemeanor is provided in the statute. I see.
All right.
Wait a minute. How about all these statutes so that
we covered that way?
We went into that yesterday. Those that
don't make it a misdemeanor.
True.
Which one are they?
They're in 4. They're unclassified misdemeanors.
Except that
the tail end, chapter 990, where they provide that if there's no penalty otherwise provided, it'll be so and so.
Class C.
Well, Class C, in those 990s, mm-hmm. which now say a misdemeanor, they'll become a Class C misdemeanor.
That's right.
Well, for example, the pollution law provided it's a misdemeanor.
Right.
So it would be a Class C.
Class C.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, a lot of those are going to have to be changed.
Well, I think eventually they should all be changed. But I think if we do it this way, they don't have to be changed. We can have some uniformity there without going through and changing every one of the statutes.
Mr. Chairman, I move we adopt Section 4.
You've heard the motion. I'm very sorry, Lee, that you weren't here yesterday. We devoted 3 hours to this discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried.
No.
Section 5.
I've been railroaded.
Just wait.
All right. Okay, 5 and 6.
both set up a table of fines, attempting to correlate the kinds of fines that can be imposed with the kinds of imprisonment. And on page 11, I quote some of the statistics that Judge Beckett had in his article, and I think he made some good points, and mainly that it's impossible now to see what the legislative intent is when you're looking at the fine that may be imposed for any given crime. That this adopts what he would call an equivalency concept. In other words, if it's a Class A fine, you're going to have a higher schedule, or a Class A crime, you're going to have a higher schedule of fines than you would otherwise.
Well,
this ignores what I'd say the experience of the social versus the criminal. Since my judgment, that there are some fines that the court uses a great latitude for punishing business crimes, I guess I'm talking about.
Yeah.
As opposed to poverty crimes, if you will, physical crimes.
Is that $10,000 enough when there's a corporation?
Business crimes
are felonies. Do we ever
Well, that's right, you can't.
Kidnapping.
Yeah, that's right, you can't.
Well, one thing, for instance, embezzlement. An accountant embezzling by juggling the books. What could be, what, a Class B felony, probably?
We want this on the record,
but
I think
it's legal. You were saying there's a fine, $5,500. Maybe that's fair.
I like the federal system where the judge has a great deal of latitude with regard to the fine, and generally you find a much larger fine for what we would have as perhaps Class C felony. And in that, and the guy doesn't go to jail, but he pays a, or maybe he goes to jail for 60 days, and he pays a $5,000 fine. And, why are you talking about tax cases?
Those are kind of all by themselves.
But I wonder if we don't have this too rigidly structured, Don. That's one criticism that I have. I think we have to have, when we discuss business and commercial frauds, or crimes in our subcommittee number one, there was a considerable amount of talk about the imposition of fines as a penalty for some of those which we would have as Class C felonies, or maybe Class A misdemeanors. The other question that I have, is do we make it clear by having a separate section for fines and a separate section for imprisonment that a judge has the latitude to impose both a sentence of imprisonment and a fine?
Well, yeah, because back under Section 2 of the article, we say that the court shall do the following. Imprisonment or a fine, or both imprisonment and a fine.
All right. Well, one question I have on the Section 5, and really on 5 and 6, would be whether we shouldn't crank into the statute the criteria which the ABA standards mention. In other words, if you look on page 117 of the ABA standards, in determining whether to impose a fine in its amount, the court should consider, and then it describes financial resources of the defendant, his other obligations, ability to pay, conditions of installment payment, and so on. The number of criteria that it seems to me it's useful for the legislature to specifically instruct the judge, in imposing a fine, you should take into consideration at least these criteria, so that there are legislatively established guidelines.
I don't see why a judge has to be told that.
Oh, Tony,
I agree with the judge on this.
Look, armed robbery says life unless there are extenuating circumstances. Now, what in the hell does that mean? And you, so you end up, we're talking about disparity here, prime example, I thought they were going to use it. In the last week, the last 10 days in Multnomah County, in armed robbery cases, life, that was one of mine, 12 years, 6 years, and 5 years. And one of the reasons is because of that statute. It says life unless there should be extenuating circumstances.
Well,
what are the circumstances that are extenuating?
I had one where the judge said that the extenuating circumstances
were... If you look on page 17 of your last draft, I sent out all this stuff.
The guys were chasing him. He did shot
a
car.
Frankly, I thought of trying to draft a section entitled Criteria for Imposition of Fines. And there were so many different considerations that I go, well, I'll just lay it before you and see what you want to do, frankly.
Can I raise a question? I have...
Because there are a lot of different considerations.
My opinion is that there is no justification for imposing a fine unless the guy is profiting by his crime. That's the only time that you should, in a felony, I'm not talking about a misdemeanor, I'm talking about a felony. Because otherwise, what it becomes, that's the way you let the guy off. That's what you're doing. And
let's recess for 5 minutes.
I
don't feel very strongly about what I've written out here, but just to give something to talk about, because they've gone so many different ways on this fine question. The ABA feels very strongly that, you know, its use in felonies should be very limited. The Model Sentencing Act provides just a $1,000 fine that can be used by the court in all cases. And then you have some of these other codes propose different criteria, and depending on whether the defendant has profited from the, is able to pay, and whether or not it will interfere with making restitution, whether he's a corporation, so many different considerations that, Frank, I just thought I'd set them out in the commentary and talk about the ABA recommendations and whatnot and see what you wanted to do. Because there are other things, you know, whether you want to authorize installment payments, you know, any number of different considerations that you may or may not want to cover.
We use them now by installment.
It's a rule of thumb deal.
They're naming the statute, but let them squawk about it.
You mean on payment fines? How do you enforce the non-payment fine that view the constitutional prohibition against the person who has?
It's becoming more and more under scrutiny now. A lot of cases now are saying that not only is the process of legal protection question and selling, which is not in prison, to pay fine if you're indigent.
Does this draft assume that if he can't pay the fine, he goes to jail?
I think the legislature ought to determine whether or not he has to serve time in jail to pay it or not.
You and I could pay a fine of $50 maybe for my offense, but X can only pay $1. Therefore, X can only pay $1 because it just is affecting based on his ability to pay as if it's ours.
The concern is whether a fine is appropriate, except possibly to make it clear the guy can't profit from his fine. Is it appropriate at any time in a felony case? The ABA would severely restrict it, except in the I think we got a strong
oversight here.
It's applying a double standard of justice for one thing.
You don't know how many people are in jail and
Oregon County jails because of failure to pay fine. Illinois, and anybody know? The studies done by President's Crime Commission and others that I've seen show there's a tremendous amount of population in county jails for failure to pay fine, sometimes over 60%. Well, that is all kinds of bad.
Do you think that's true in Oregon, Derek?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Well, there's that 67 law which was passed that says if you can't pay the fine, you can get out.
Yeah.
That's the pauper result you're talking about, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's entirely on the burden is entirely on the prisoner in that case. He may never know about that act or know what to do about it. I don't think that's a factor. That's the same provision in cities. Doesn't seem to have much impact.
Lee Johnson has a motion.
I'd make a motion under Section 5, the one we're talking about now, which would say that the court may award, may impose a fine, and I wouldn't put any limitation on the amount. And then we would spell out criteria as to when the fine would be used.
Would you be satisfied if the criteria were set forth in the commentary rather than by statute? That's what we're just discussing.
No, it should be set forth in the statute.
Well,
I'm not very hot for the commentary.
All those in favor of that motion, say aye.
I'm sorry, Chairman. What is the motion again, please?
My motion would be one that the amount of the fine would not fix an amount in the statute. It would be an unlimited amount. And then secondly, we would spell out carefully what criteria would be used in imposing the fine. One would be ability to pay. Secondly, that would only be used in those cases where it was a matter that the person had profited from his crime.
All those in favor say aye.
Do we really want to do that?
I don't think so.
In felonies?
Standards.
All those in favor say aye.
Well, you can put in a third. Oh, come on. Tony, give me a chance.
Oh, all right.
Well, all right. The third criteria would be to try to I don't think the fine is an appropriate sanction in a felony case. That's my point.
Now, if you look on page 18 of this marvelous commentary I have here.
On the last article, Lee.
Page 18, I've got three paragraphs there that talk about the Model Penal Code, the Model Sentencing Act, and the ABA, which I think give you a fairly good idea of what the three different approaches are under each of those proposals.
Where's this?
On page 18
of the last article.
Authority of Court and Sentencing.
Oh.
I don't know how we can expect much from him when he can't even find the page.
Takes the most restrictive view of all of them towards the use of the fine in felony cases.
In certain instances, I've required as a condition that he make restitution payments, but not fines as such.
In what kind of cases?
Oh, I remember that arson case they had here a while back where he copped out to third degree arson. And the evidence was kind of mixed that he'd actually gotten any money out of it, but the insurance company lost a lot of money on it, so I just told him that he was going to be required.